I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. This month marks the fifth anniversary of the Citizens United decision, in which the Supreme Court struck down limits on campaign spending by corporations and unions. The decision paved the way for political action committees to raise unlimited funds, and campaign spending by outside groups has risen to remarkable heights. Since 2010, super PACs have spent more than $1 billion across all federal elections. Can and should anything be done about big money in politics? Maryland State Senator Jamie Raskin has an idea involving company shareholders. We'll hear about a Maryland effort to undo so-called corporate personhood, while a libertarian scholar says Citizens United has been misunderstood. That's all ahead in the first hour of Midday, after the news from NPR.
This is your NPR news station, WYPR.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us. This month marks the fifth anniversary of the Citizens United decision, in which the Supreme Court held that political donations made by private corporations and unions are protected by the First Amendment as a form of free speech. The court struck down a ban on expenditures by corporations and unions, opening the floodgates for unlimited campaign donations. The decision increased the influence of super PACs, political action committees that can collect unlimited donations but do not contribute directly to candidates or parties. Last year, in the McCutcheon ruling by the Supreme Court, the court also overturned individual total limits on donors contributing to more than one candidate, party, or political action committee. Last week, Congress refused to take action in terms of campaign reform. Campaign spending since 2010 has exploded. New York University's Brennan Center for Justice found that on Senate elections alone, outside spending more than doubled from 2010 to 2014 to $486 million. Outside spending facilitated by the Citizens United decision. That's money spent not by the candidates themselves, but formerly unaffiliated groups. That's what's exploded. Brennan Center also found that across all federal elections since Citizens United was decided in 2010, there has been more than $1 billion in super PAC spending. Just 195 individuals and their spouses gave almost 60% of that money, more than $600 million. When asked about the worst decision the current Supreme Court has produced, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg told the New Republic, quote, "If there was one decision I would overrule, it would be Citizens United. I think the notion that we have all the democracy that money can buy strays so far from what our democracy is supposed to be," end quote. A study of campaign finance filings by Politico found that total spending by the 100 ultra donors exceeded that of the 4.75 million ordinary Americans who made much smaller donations of $200 or less. We're going to take a look at Citizens United Plus 5 during this hour of the show. Is it a bad thing for the country? What should we or could we do about it? Our first guest today is Maryland State Senator Jamie Raskin of Montgomery County. Senator Raskin is a professor of constitutional law at American University, and he has a very interesting proposal that would give shareholders of these companies a way to question or even oppose corporate spending on political campaigns. So, Jamie Raskin, welcome to Midday. Nice to have you on the show with us.
Dan, I'm delighted to be with you.
Listen, before we get into what you're proposing, which we could call Shareholders United, maybe, could you just, in your own words, share for our audience what you think, what is your major concern about Citizens United? This is the first time I've had a chance to speak with you since that decision 5 years ago. And is it as bad as we thought it would be?
Well, the decision basically turned upside down two centuries of understanding of what a corporation is. It goes back to Chief Justice John Marshall, who said in 1819 in the Dartmouth College case that a corporation is an artificial entity and it possesses only the rights that are conferred upon it by state law. And this has been a central doctrine of conservative jurisprudence for a couple of centuries. Chief Justice Rehnquist said that, of course, corporations don't have political rights because they exist for economic purposes. Justice Byron White, another conservative, said that corporations are endowed with very valuable privileges, like limited liability of the shareholders, perpetual life of the corporation, bankruptcy protections, all kinds of social and legal supports and subsidies, and therefore the trade-off is they're not allowed to get involved in politics. The way he put it was, the corporation's the creature of the state. The state need not permit its own creation to consume it. So that was the basic understanding. And then suddenly in Citizens United, Justice Kennedy and a five-justice majority reaches out, asks a question that had never been posed to it by the parties below, insisted that the parties re-argue the case, rebrief the case. They come back, and what do you know, they pull a rabbit out of the hat and say a corporation is essentially a political citizen that has all the rights of the people, which means that the CEO can take money out of the corporate treasury to put into political campaigns. Of course, before corporate executives could spend their own money like anybody else, they could pool their money into a PAC, like a union PAC. But now what they're saying is that the CEO can take money directly out of the corporate treasury and put it into politics, and it's a very dangerous moment for political democracy.
It was argued that corporations are collections of individuals and an expression of the group.
Well, yes, and the premise of the case is that a corporation is just an association of citizens. And so I'm saying, okay, let's then take the Supreme Court at its word. Justice Kennedy says that the CEO is just speaking for the shareholders of the corporation. And so that is the genesis of the Shareholders United plan, which is corporations can spend money in politics as long as, one, the company is disclosing the spending that's going on and putting it on the company website within 48 hours, and two, the company can certify that the contributions and the expenditures that have been made have been ratified and approved by the shareholders. And they wouldn't have to ratify each individual expenditure or contribution, but at the beginning of the year, they would have to ratify a political budget of the corporation and say, yes, we don't mind if our money or we support our money being used in political campaigns in this way. But right now, not only are the shareholders not being given the chance to vote on it, they don't even know about it because despite the fact that Justice Kennedy said they would know because there would be online disclosure, there is no disclosure. Congress has failed to pass Congressman Van Hollen's Disclose Act. The Securities and Exchange Commission has failed to require any disclosure of the publicly held corporations, and so no disclosure is happening, much less an authorization process. So I would like Maryland to be in the forefront of the states to say, we're going to take Citizens United seriously and require that the shareholders be apprised of it and have a say in it.
And specifically, what are you proposing, Senator Raskin?
Simply that the companies have to get the authorization of a majority of the shares voting before they engage in any political expenditures, and then all political spending be disclosed immediately within 48 hours to the shareholders on the company website. So it's also available for the public to see. And Justice Kennedy says in Citizens United, well, people are raising the problem of corporate corruption and special interest and so on. And he says the answer to that is to use the mechanisms of corporate democracy and to have disclosure online. And that's precisely what we're proposing to do on the fifth anniversary of the decision.
So is it proposed political expenditures that they would have to post?
No, they would only have to post actual political expenditures,
okay.
But they couldn't make them without a prior vote by the shareholders authorizing the expenditure. And understand, this is much less than what goes on in the union context, okay? Because union members actually have a right. If you have to join a union, and so you're not putting your money in voluntarily, if you belong to a so-called agency shop, you have a right to a rebate for any union political expenditures that you disagree with. And the Supreme Court has said that in several decisions, the Beck decision and the Abood decision, that you know not only do you have a right to participate in your union, and not only does the union have to disclose to you all political expenses, but if you disagree with it, you can get a rebate for that portion of your agency fees that were spent on political causes you disagree with.
This is a very interesting proposal, because what you're saying is you would somehow solicit the wishes of the shareholders. They own the majority interest in the company, right?
Well, that's right. I mean, I don't buy the Citizens United majority's definition of a corporation. I don't think those people are getting together and buying stock in General Motors or McDonald's in order to be a political association. I think they're an economic association. But the Supreme Court has redefined them as an economic and a political association. Well, if that's the case, if, you know, General Motors and McDonald's Corporation are going to speak for everybody who owns shares, and by the way, that's tens of millions of people because of the way our retirement funds are distributed through Wall Street, if they're going to speak for us politically, then they should have to consult us first and see whether we actually want to be spending money on political campaigns. I mean, I happen to think, you know, I tried to trace my own retirement fund dollars down, and, you know, and it's hundreds of corporations I'm invested in through these mutual funds. I've never been consulted once, and I think I've got nothing in common with other retirees who own little pieces of shares, other than the fact that we all want a comfortable retirement one day, and we probably don't want any of our retirement savings to be siphoned off to political campaigns.
I'm wondering what the reaction to this idea has been, because you floated it last year. In fact, I read your op-ed back in October in the Washington Post describing this legislation in Maryland. So what kind of reaction have you gotten to it?
Well, I've gotten a great response from, you know, both colleagues in Maryland and then also from colleagues around the country in state legislatures. They understand Washington is totally paralyzed, complete standoff, nothing's happening there. And if we're going to get disclosure and we're going to get shareholder democracy, it's got to be through the states. So there's a lot of interest in this, and there have already been several bills introduced in state legislatures in other parts of the country, and there are going to be a bunch more coming as the idea spreads. And, of course, in order to make it effective, we really need it to happen in every state so that this is part of our understanding of what a corporation is. If it's been transformed into a political entity by the Supreme Court, the shareholders really do have to be in the driver's seat. It can't just be up to the executives and the CEOs to decide to spend our money on their favored political candidates.
I appreciate what you're doing here. It's very interesting. I want to go back to my question about 5 years after Citizens United. What do you see as the problems, and is there a problem? Some people may be wondering, okay, this is money that's not spent by the candidates themselves, but by these other groups, these formally unaffiliated groups. And wealthy people who may or may not be associated with corporations are putting their money into this. What's wrong with that picture? What's wrong with that picture?
Well, what's going on is a kind of invisible shakedown of millions of American citizens who are shareholders through their investments or their retirement and pension funds. I've got an article in this week's Nation magazine, which they gave the title, The Republican Governors, Thank You for Your Donation. You could just as well have said the Democratic governors, but the New York Times had an article about something called the Republican Governors Public Policy Committee, which they describe as a secretive 501c4 that doesn't have to disclose either its receipts or its campaign expenditures. It turns out that there are dozens of corporations that have put millions of dollars into it, and I've got the complete list you can check out, Aetna, Coca-Cola, ExxonMobil, Microsoft, Pfizer, and so on. That's just one of many such outfits, C4 so-called social welfare organizations that are really set up to be involved in politics and then to solicit, recruit, and collect corporate money invisibly. And this is the so-called dark money, where hundreds of millions of dollars of money from large corporations that the public is invested in is flowing into these shadowy party committees, and there's no real disclosure taking place. That one was found out by accident because somebody there accidentally released the list of corporate donors and how much they were giving. Well, it turns out that I was invested, I just looked at my retirement fund, in the vast majority of those corporations that wrote checks to this entity to get Republican governors elected, including Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, the union busting anti-choice governor. And I don't feel good about my money going there. And conversely, if those corporations are also giving to Democratic governors, because I assume there's a parallel outfit on the Democratic side, I don't think that conservatives and Republicans should have their investments conscripted into going to give to political campaigns, candidates, and causes that they don't believe in.
But it doesn't go directly to candidates.
Well, no, it goes to the C4 organization, which spends on their behalf. And so none of it's visible. None of it is reportable or disclosable. But I never heard of the Republican Governor's Public Policy Committee, and I can assure you I would never send them $1 of my retirement funds.
Jamie Raskin, thank you for being with us today. Have you actually filed this legislation in Annapolis?
No, we're in the process of collecting co-sponsors right now and getting the word out, but it will be introduced before the end of January for the 5th anniversary of Citizens United.
Very interesting proposal there. Thank you for describing it for us.
I'm delighted to be with you, Dan. Many thanks.
Senator Jamie Raskin of Montgomery County, also a professor of constitutional law at American University, joining us for this hour-long discussion of the Citizens United case 5 years later. We'll take a short break here. When we return, we'll hear from Ilya Shapiro, senior fellow at the Cato Institute, who argues that Citizens United is misunderstood, has been misunderstood, and that we've overreacted to it. Stay with us. And welcome back to Midday. 410-662-8780. Dan Roderick's here. That's our phone number if you'd like to join our conversation about the Citizens United case 5 years after it was decided by the Supreme Court. Now, the view of Ilya Shapiro, a senior fellow in constitutional studies for the Cato Institute, who had a pretty interesting piece just last week on the actual anniversary of Citizens United, saying that this case has been really misunderstood and there's a lot of myths associated with it. So let's get into that now with Ilya Shapiro. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
My pleasure.
Where did we get it wrong? Why don't you start with I like your quoting President Obama in that 2010 State of the Union address, which came right, a couple weeks after the Supreme Court ruling. The president said, "The Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates of special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections." What did the president get wrong there, Ilya?
Well, he got at least four things wrong, which is a lot in one sentence. And he basically, by the way, repeated that sentence last week on the anniversary of Citizens United. And, nothing has essentially changed in his or others' analysis of those who criticize Citizens United. So first of all, the case did not overturn a century of law or reverse the long-time ban on corporate donations to campaigns. There's a very old statute, the Tillman Act of 1907, that prohibits corporate donations to campaigns. After the Second World War, a similar prohibition was applied to unions. None of that was touched. This case did not involve donations to candidates or parties or campaigns or anything like that. This was about independent political speech, what you can talk about ahead of an election. Secondly, the floodgates points that there's now a whole bunch of special interests that didn't exist before. The data don't bear that out. That is that every election cycle in modern times, there's an increase in political spending, kind of an inflationary aspect to it, if you will. But there's certainly not been a change in corporate spending. Your Googles or your Exxons, your Microsofts, pick whatever company you really like or don't like, they don't tend to spend on direct political speech because they don't want to antagonize half of their customers. They tend to lobby more. They tend to do other things. But what has increased is individual donations, like by whether George Soros or Charles Koch or Tom Steyer, Sheldon Adelson, pick whichever billionaire you want to talk about. They have been donating more. But of course, Citizens United did not talk about donations by individuals, either independently or contributing to campaigns. Next, the case didn't say anything about foreign spending. Indeed, 2 years later, in 2012, Supreme Court summarily upheld restrictions on donations by foreigners, including foreign speech by foreign corporations. And finally, it's not a free-for-all. There are still very strict limits on how much people can donate to candidates, to parties. There was a bit of a loosening last year in a case called McCutcheon about the aggregate limits, how much you can donate in total to all federal candidates. But again, that only affects about 600 people in the last cycle who could afford to spend that, who could hit that $123,000 cap. Frankly, if you have that much money, I wish you would send it more of it to Cato, perhaps even some of it to NPR as well.
Specifically, corporations, there's still a ban on independent spending by corporations. Is that right?
No. Is actually.
I mean directly to campaigns. What I mean
right,
is directly
correct,
to candidates,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's still in place. The money, the so-called the dark money, when people use that term, they're talking about money that goes that's not spent by candidates, but by these unaffiliated groups, super PACs.
Well, super PACs are actually different than what people tend to talk about when they say. I mean, it depends what you mean, because dark money isn't a real term. It was kind of invented by Anti-Citizens United campaign reform, so-called reformers. If it means super PACs, you can find out lots about super PACs, who donate to them, who their offices are, that sort of thing. What you can't find out so much are so-called social welfare organizations that are organized under Section 501(c)(4) mm-hmm. of the tax code. And that has nothing to do with the Federal Election Commission or campaign law. That's the tax code. So perhaps, you know, there need to be more disclosures or restrictions of what social welfare means or what have you, but that's a separate situation than super PACs, let alone what Citizens United was dealing with.
I wish you could address this for us, Ilya Shapiro, at least to get your view on this, that the corporations are an artificial entity, that they're not really people, versus the argument that they're a collection of individuals.
Sure. Well, I don't think anybody argues that corporations are actual living, breathing people. That's a misnomer. And so when you talk about corporate rights, which is not a new concept, you know, Citizens United did not invent the idea of corporate rights. It's been around for 150 years in various contexts. For example, the police can't raid the offices of IBM. That would be a Fourth Amendment violation of IBM's rights. The mayor of New York can't take over Rockefeller Center without paying just compensation. That would be a violation of the Fifth Amendment. And so it all depends on whether it makes sense to recognize corporate rights in particular contexts. Corporations can't have any rights with regard to, say, abortion or personal privacy, these sorts of things. It just makes no sense. In the context of speech, you think about, you know, do people lose the rights, do individuals, human beings, how are their rights protected? And the court ultimately decided that when people get together and associate, doesn't matter whether through a for-profit corporation, a union, a nonprofit, an advocacy group, or what have you, a bunch of buddies playing poker, say, they don't lose their rights when they act in association. And it's an interesting wrinkle, but it's not really kind of an earth-shattering new development in how we think about corporations.
Hmm. What about the concept of undue influence? Are you concerned at all that even under a new format, using this new formula, doing away with the old rules and establishing these, we don't have 527s anymore, we have super PACs, that it amounts to the same thing, whether it's messaging or money that goes directly to a candidate. If it's messaging in favor of a candidate or the candidate's ideology or a particular issue in a campaign, that it amounts to the same kind of undue influence by a corporation.
Well, I don't know what a due amount of influence would be. You know, do we want the government weighing how much incumbency is worth and being able to, you know, send flyers to your constituents touting everything that you've done? Or if a celebrity runs, what is the monetary value of that celebrity name recognition? It's kind of a difficult thing to judge. But moreover, super PACs are a creature of, not of Citizens United. Well, they are directly a creature of Citizens United in the way that it liberated independent speech. But kind of the modern campaign finance regime, when the Supreme Court ruled in 1976, when it struck down certain parts of the post-Watergate campaign finance law, and upheld certain others, it created a situation where there could and are limits on donations to candidates and campaigns, but there aren't essentially limits on expenditures. There's some instability there wherein it's easier to donate to and spend money on independent speech and harder to donate to candidates and parties. There's this kind of irony that candidates and parties are relatively disfavored in the political world, in the political speech world, vis-a-vis independent speakers. And so money is always going to be in politics because politics matters. Cato has lots of ideas about how to reduce the size of government, reduce the size of politics. But once it's big, there's going to be money trying to chase it, trying to affect it, trying to get carve-outs and subsidies and supporting candidates to support your policies, that sort of thing. And so I think the solution isn't to try to restrict or push down on a balloon to have that balloon pop up somewhere else, but to free it up further and have a true open marketplace of ideas and let the voters be the judge.
But there's a disproportionality here. I just quoted figures analyzed by the Brennan Center at NYU showing that spending by the super PACs has reached $1 billion since Citizens United. And then of that, 60%, $600 million of that total came from just 195 donors. Quote here, this is from the Georgetown law professor, David Cole, who we had on this show a while back. Quote, those 195 individuals have only one vote each, but does anyone believe that their combined expenditure of over $600 million does not give them disproportionate influence on the politicians they have supported? This is a game played by and for the wealthy.
Well, that's not at all clear. Most people, when they're involved in politics, do it because they have some sort of affinity for the ideas, whether it be a particular issue area, whether it be general, liberal, or conservative of politics. And it seems that people aren't just methodical or brainless sheep that follow whatever the advertising put in front of them does. You know, there's lots of money spent on campaigns. In the initial round in 2012, all of the Republican super PACs didn't seem to be able to convince people to vote for Mitt Romney or whatever the case may be. So, yeah, obviously, richer people spend more money on political ads, but they also spend more money on yachts. They spend more money on lots of things. And at the end of the day, Americans spend more on, say, Halloween every year than they spend on elections. So we have to put this into perspective.
Let's take a call, if you don't mind. Ilya Shapiro from the Cato Institute. This is Matthew in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Thank you for calling Midday.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate you having me.
Sure.
I want to ask your guest. It seems to me, just as an observer looking into the process, watching Kevin Nazir's campaign, which was privately funded, watching Larry Hogan, who took public money and actually won, was substantially outspent by his opponent, and Eric Cantor, who outspent his opponent in his primary by 30-1, that the issue of money seems to be less of a concern in a lot of local politics. But a lot of people seem to be equating lots of money with lots of speech, when what I hear a lot is the idea that not the amount of money in a lot of cases, but it's the fact that the people aren't sure where the money's coming from, and they're concerned about the influence that that money has, and who has where, and who is speaking more than anyone else. But as far as I can tell, the amount of money really has very little to do with it. People just don't want people with inordinate amounts of money being able to speak more or have more influence on the system. Is there any evidence that all this speech or money is having a significant impact somewhere where it wouldn't otherwise be having?
That's a very good question. I mean, it's hard to measure. It's like advertising in any realm. You don't know what works and what causes people to buy your product. And you're right. Those examples of David Bratt and Larry Hogan and many others show that it's not just about who spends more, even if it's multiples opposed to someone else that is the winner. The concern does tend to be to the extent that this is even an issue that the public cares about. It generally doesn't make the top 10 list of what people care about when they're voting or what their concerns are in politics. But the concern is, you know, do we know what's going on? Are there foreign interests? Is there quid pro quo corruption, that sort of thing? Most of these concerns go more towards direct donations to candidates, which, of course, are regulated and restricted, unlike the independent speech. And, you know, when we're talking about how to reform the system, I could go for a system where you take off the limits on contribution by individuals, not by corporations, to candidates and parties, as long as there's disclosures at the very highest levels. I mean, I don't think I was testifying about this in the Senate Judiciary Committee a couple of years ago, and I told the chairman of the subcommittee, Dick Durbin, at the time, that I don't think you can be bought with $2,600, which was the limit for election. So I think the disclosure should be, you know, for the big boys. You know, you donate $500,000 or $1 million or whatever the schedule might be, commensurate to the office, maybe a sliding scale of some sort. Then there's, you know, a greater interest perhaps in the public knowing that counterbalances the interest in anonymous speech. But it's a complicated question in that manner, and I agree with you. At the end of the day, this is why the Supreme Court has only held that quid pro quo corruption and the appearance thereof is the only interest that justifies campaign finance restrictions, and that's why in Citizens United it overturned the only case, the 1990 case, that found some other type of interest.
Ilya, one more question from our audience. This is Eric in Baltimore. Go right ahead. You're on with Ilya Shapiro.
Thanks, Dan. I wonder if we ought to come at this a different way. It's obvious to me from my own experience that most corporations and organizations generally in this country do not operate as democratic institutions themselves. It would seem to me that Congress could pass a law tomorrow that would mandate that all public companies have a democratic structure. It's in the last election, we saw the a guy that owned a mining company in Ohio essentially telling his employees how to vote. If we were serious about democratic reform, why not do what the Germans do and insist that laborers have a say on the boards of companies, and that corporations, at least public ones, operate as democracies.
Eric, did you hear Jamie Raskin, Senator Raskin, on the show earlier?
I did, but that's shareholder democracy,
okay,
Dan. That doesn't say anything.
That's
about
a step toward
about the workers.
Yeah. Okay. And I would thank you, Ilya. You can respond to Eric's suggestion there. At the same time, maybe address what Jamie Raskin has proposed that. At least in Maryland, he's a state senator, so he wants to require managers of Maryland registered corporations who want to, you know, engage in political spending to post all of their expenditures on websites and confirm, you know, that this is something that the shareholders approve of.
Sure. Well, corporations are fundamentally different organizations, different entities than governments are. They're private organizations, even when they're raise money publicly. Well, in this sense, the term public doesn't mean governmental. It just means it's open for people to buy shares, you know, the general public. And in that case, it's a democracy in the sense of one share, one vote. I mean, again, the bottom line for a corporation is to make profits. And so its managers, its directors are all oriented towards that. And if they do a bad job, they get sacked or they get voted out or what have you. And to that same extent, the reason why corporations are not speaking generally about politics is because that doesn't help their bottom line. There's a very strong doctrine in corporate law called the business judgment rule. So while it might make sense for, say, an Exxon to take out ads about oil regulatory policy, it doesn't make sense for Exxon to say generally, vote for this party or not, or generally, you know, we're against abortion. That has nothing, or for pro-choice. That has nothing to do with that company's bottom line. The kind of the broader point about workers' councils and these sorts of things, workers' rights are supposed to be protected. They are under federal law, various kind of labor practice protections. Bosses are not supposed to be telling workers how to vote or threatening them that if they don't vote or they don't go to vote, they lose their job or they have some sort of adverse action taken against them. Those protections are in place. In the campaign area, you cannot even say, give your money to your worker to tell them to donate to circumvent the contribution limits. There are laws against that. So, you know, perhaps there are room for corporate reforms. I don't know if there's not enough transparency in certain companies, whether with respect to political spending or corporate expenses. You know, are executives taking vacations on the company's dime? You know, maybe, you know, I don't know what Maryland's law is with respect to, you know, corporate disclosures of expenses and so forth. But, you know, that every company needs to take a look at that. And you know, it might be a way to sell themselves to their customers. Look, we're completely open. You can see everything that we spend money on. But these are kind of getting corporate reform areas, I think, are getting further and further away from regulation of political speech, which is ultimately what these cases are about when we're talking about campaign finance.
Ilya Shapiro is a senior fellow in constitutional studies at the Cato Institute. Thank you for your perspectives on this.
My pleasure.
Nice to have you on the show. Our conversation about Citizens United 5 years later continues after a short break here. Coming up, Charlie Cooper will be joining us. He's president of Get Money Out Maryland. Get Money Out Maryland is an all-volunteer effort working toward a constitutional amendment to fight corporate personhood. And also, Congressman John Sarbanes is going to be joining us, too, to get his comments about Citizens United 5 years along. A short break on midday. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday. If you'd like to join our conversation or you have a comment or question about Citizens United, 410-662-8780. In a moment, we're going to hear from Congressman John Sarbanes about Citizens United. But I want to say hello first to Charlie Cooper, who's president of Get Money Out - Maryland, or Get Money Out - Maryland. Charlie, nice to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dan. I really appreciate your inviting us.
What's your group all about?
Our group is about encouraging the power of the individual citizen in our politics and reducing the undue influence of money. So you've had some debates on the principles with Senator Raskin, whom we love, and with the gentleman from the Cato Institute. But the fact is, almost everyone has made up their mind in the public. 80% think that there's too much influence of big money and corporate money and maybe union money, too. But the trouble is they're not sure what to do about it. Our idea is if the Supreme Court is going to make bad rulings, then we should amend. And in the history of the United States, we've used the amendment process to get rid of slavery, to give women the vote, to give 18-year-olds the vote, to have the direct election of senators. So we've made the country more democratic and moved it towards the views that were laid out in the Declaration of Independence that weren't really implemented in the beginning. And we can do it again.
So you'd need a specific amendment that would say what?
Well, it would deal with these concepts of, can the states and the federal government regulate money in politics, and can they regulate these so-called independent expenditures? Because the independence is really a shaky concept.
Mm-hmm.
And in our particular case, we would address the question of making sure everyone has a constitutional right to vote. But we have a whole different approach to how we're going to get the amendment. That's really what makes people hopeful.
Okay, you want to explain
it? And that is that.
By the way, when I use that term corporate personhood,
yeah,
this is this sort of sarcastic term we've used to describe Citizen United and what the Supreme Court
came up amendment, with. Our amendment process would address that. We think that's a ridiculous concept, frankly. The corporation, people who are involved in corporations are getting a benefit. They don't also get a right on top of their individual right to speech. They already have the right to speech.
So how would you go about this?
So the way we're going about this,
it always looks like a daunting process to people. Right?
Okay, we're using Article 5 of the Constitution, which is the amendment clause, and there's a clause that says that you can propose an amendment to the Constitution totally without Congress. So one of the reasons people are so cynical and depressed about this is you can't get Congress to agree on anything, right? And with 54 U.S. senators did vote to amend the Constitution on this issue, but you need 67. Well, how are we going to get there? If two-thirds of the states ask for a convention on a topic, and the purpose of the convention is to write an amendment, and then it gets proposed to the states, and three-quarters of the states can ratify it, or it doesn't get ratified, Okay. In this case, the way the Constitution is phrased, all Congress's only role is to call the convention, and they have to call the convention. So the people in the states, and this is what President Dwight D. Eisenhower said, the people in the states, irrespective of Congress, if they feel their democratic rights to a representative democracy are being undermined, they can do something about it. Now, we've already got three states that have issued this call on this topic of overturning Citizens United and corporate personhood. That's Vermont, California, and Illinois. Senator Raskin put this measure in for us last year. This year, it's going to be Senator Pinsky in the Senate, who's vice chair of the committee it's going to, and Delegate Hickson. And last year in the Senate, we got a 9-2 favorable vote, and we got 6 Democrats and 3 Republicans to vote for this measure.
Get Money Out, Maryland. So are there other chapters of Get Money Out?
Well, our national group is called Wolfpack.
Wolfpack.
Right. And and we're working in about 40 states.
Pushing toward the same goal.
Working toward the same goal.
Okay.
And we're working in about 40 states. So tomorrow, we're going to be in Annapolis, and don't snow anymore, please.
Okay. You have a hearing on the bill?
No. We're just going down to gather and hear some speeches, and then we're going to visit all 188 offices. I'm going to take them a copy of the U.S. Constitution, and inside will be our literature piece. We've got 69 delegates and senators already on the record saying that they support what we're doing, but we're looking to get a majority in each house. We're looking to win our committee votes. We think we're going to do it this year.
Charlie, I saw your website, but I don't remember the URL. What is the website?
It's www.getmoneyoutmd.org.
Okay, thank you very much. Congressman Sarbanes is joining us. John Sarbanes has been on the show before talking about not only Citizens United, but the McCutcheon ruling and his proposal to get small money into politics and people back into campaigns. John Sarbanes, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Dan. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's fine. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Charlie Cooper is here with us from Get Money Out, Maryland. See, your idea is to get more people involved, the small donations. By the way, how is that going? Are you making any progress in getting more sponsors?
First of all, let me applaud Charlie for the good work that they're doing, bringing attention to this sense of being left out and locked out that so many people have when they kind of look at their democracy today. Dan, last week on the anniversary of Citizens United, the fifth-year anniversary, we reintroduced the Government by the People Act, which is H.R. 20, with 138 original co-sponsors, including one Republican. So it is bipartisan in that respect. I think we can build on that. But that shows what a strong foundation there is in the House for this idea of small donor empowerment. And what I want to do is step back. You've had, a very good show kind of summarizing all of the different efforts that are underway, whether it's shareholder protection, there's push for disclosure and transparency of where money comes from, there's the effort to amend the Constitution to try to repeal the effects of Citizens United, and then there's the small donor empowerment model that I'm very keen on, which is the idea of sort of bringing people out of the bleachers and into the ring and saying to the $25 and $50 donor, you're as consequential as any high donor, and you can get the candidate to turn and pay attention to you. But all of those things are reflections, one way or the other, of what is, in a sense, a movement across the country. And this is a movement by ordinary citizens to take government back from big money and special interests. And I think what we do is we pursue all of these things simultaneously, and then we see which one presents the opportunity first to get it done. And then we put all of the energy and momentum that is building out there behind that effort. And so I welcome the kind of diversity of expressions of this feeling that people have out there that they want to get their government back. I think we can build on that. And I think it can't be denied. And that's what's so exciting about it.
The Government by the People Act. Remember that name. And if you support it, write to your congressman. Maybe it's not John Sarbanes. Maybe it's someone else in Maryland. Or write to any congressman about it. Because,
yeah,
I guess it sounds like I'm endorsing it.
HR
I am 20. Endorsing it. I think it's a good idea. So thank you, John.
All right, take care.
Thank you, John Sarbanes. And another John is calling us, Charlie Cooper. This is John in Towson, who wanted to make a comment about all this. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Good. John, you have to turn your radio down so we don't get that.
Okay, I'm going to go in the other room. Go ahead.
You're going in the other room?
Yes.
Good. Go ahead, John. What did you want to say about this?
Well, I wanted to say, and Congressman Sarbanes has already touched on this a bit, I hear all the discussions and all the nuances about legislation and constitutionality. The bottom line in this problem, I think, is what most people miss, and that a congressman or a senator or even a state legislature has to raise a lot of money to run for office. And he's not going to get it from his individual citizens, because I lecture on this and I ask people in the room who contributed $1,000 to the last campaign, and nobody ever raises their hand.
Right.
So we've got to take the money out of the process. And the piper has to be paid. So if the piper is being paid by corporations and big lobbyists, that's who the congressman or the legislator has to listen to. He doesn't have to listen to you or me. So we've got to create solutions that make us equal in tone to that. I'm not brilliant enough to come up with the solutions. That we'll leave that to John Sarbanes and the legislatures. But
I think you're talking about public financing, aren't you, John?
Is that what you want to call it? That's fine.
Yeah, well,
do it like the English do. Limit the amount of money and appropriate equal amounts to everybody.
Everybody, yeah. I mean, we've heard some good ideas here, starting with Jamie Raskin. Of course, John Sarbanes has been on the show before. I think he's got a good idea there. Yours, Charlie Cooper, I would say is the most daunting, but I like the idea of going outside of Congress to get it done,
to the
states.
It's amazing how much support we're getting, Dan. I mean, we started in my living room 26 months ago with six people. We got 1,000 people. And when we go into the halls in Annapolis, in many, many offices, people say, boy, my phone's ringing off the hook. I'm hearing from you. And that's one thing you can do. You can call your delegates and senators. Go to mdelect.net, mdelect.net. Find out who your delegate and senator is. Call them up and say, I support the Democracy Amendment Resolution. And tell them you support Senator Raskin's Shareholders United bill, too.
Charlie Cooper is with Get Money Out Maryland. I just want to mention again, Charlie, your rally is tomorrow at 10:30
right.
at Annapolis.
In the House Office Building.
In the House Office Building. By the way, what got you to this? What do you do in life that made you interested in this
subject?
You
know, I was retired from state government. I'm a very fortunate individual. So as soon as Citizens United happened 5 years ago, I called up Jamie Raskin on the phone and I said, we got to do something about this. But then 2.5 years passed and I hadn't done anything and I just got sick of myself. So I decided to call friends together and people I knew, and we started with the six people and we had a rally for the third anniversary. But last year, this thing really took off. And we, as I said, we almost got this thing through the Senate. We're going to get it this year. We're going to be at least, there's going to be at least four states, but I think there'll be six, seven more states. And then it's going to start becoming something that people think can be done. And that, the reception you get from your state legislator is so much better on average, not every single one, but on average, than trying to talk to Congress. Because
right.
why?
Right.
As this gentleman has said, the Congress people have to spend 4 or 5 hours a day on the phone asking for money.
Mm-hmm.
How can they even think straight the rest of the day? They're telemarketers. They're on the phone 4 or 5 hours a day asking for money, and they're talking to the people whose interests aren't the same as yours. You know, Professor Martin Gillins at Princeton had this big study of 1,800 issues, and the average person's interests are just not being represented by the Congress.
Well,
he
Charlie,
proved it pretty convincingly.
Charlie, I wish you luck with this. Get Money Out Maryland, and we'll follow up, okay?
All right.
Yeah,
thank you,
Charlie
Dan.
Cooper, who is the president of this group now, seeking the constitutional amendment, going around Congress, going through the states here. So we'll see. Charlie, thanks very much. And enjoy lunch. We have lunch today provided by Rossina Gourmet. Since 1999, Rossina Gourmet has served handmade, locally sourced ingredients for their sandwiches, soups, salads, and vegetarian items. Rossina Gourmet, located in Canton, downtown Baltimore, and Harbor East. They have catering available, too. Go to Rossina, R-O-S-I-N-A, Gourmet. com. That's the first hour of midday. Thank you for being tuned in. We have another hour coming up, so please stay with us.